Come on, guys. Episode 445. We're halfway to 890.
Yeah, and we're winding down 2018. Mm-hmm. We're really getting close. There's only a couple more episodes left, and it really feels like we're getting into the slowdown as far as work goes, but speed up for Oscar movies.
Yeah.
And but like we were talking about before, not only is it we're speeding up on Oscar movies, that the studios have decided that around Christmas is going to be the second summer.
Oh, yeah.
For summer movies now. This is, I think, an interesting thing coming up this weekend. We'll get into a little later. But you have Deadpool, PG-13, coming out, along with Into the Spider-Verse. So you have two Marvel properties that aren't produced by Marvel coming out on the same
and
weekend.
And a Transformer movie.
And a Transformer movie.
That you're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm. That's coming up, too. So, all right. Let's... do we have any announcements, or we'll just get into our guests?
Our announcements are this, guys. We'll, on Christmas, since Christmas Day, we're going to release our year-end thank you show, and then January 1st, we're going to do a 2019 movie preview episode.
Yes, to kind of get you primed for what's coming up for the year, and what we're excited about, and what we may not be so excited about.
Yeah. There's a good and a bad.
Yeah.
So let's bring in our guest here. He's been on the show multiple times. Yep. He's has his own show on All Things Comedy, Tinfoil Hat, which I was just on.
It's kind of a podcast chameleon. Every time we were with Sam, he's like doing a different show. He's got a different angle. Yeah. It's really kind of cool. He's constantly evolving. He's a podcast evolver.
I respect that, dude. Yeah. I respect that. That's the nice thing anyone's ever said about him. Adapt or die, dog. Yeah.
Sam Tripoli, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
How is I was just on Tinfoil Hat, yeah, which I absolutely love doing.
Yeah, you were great, man.
We just love, and I've picked up some fans, like some of the like a couple Tinfoil Hat people have come out to see Ron Placona and I do progressive comedy tour stuff, which is great. So it's like
they're a very interesting group. They're very supportive. Like on that one feed, I've had four different podcasts. Right? They whatever reason the other ones like the Naughty Show was just it ran its course. It was great. We did 300 episodes. You can only interview a transsexual midget so many times before you've heard the story, you know. And so. That died off, and then you know I did like a ranting show, then a storytelling show, and then just one day I decided to start doing just I love conspiracies, and it's hit, and it's been a lot of fun, and it's interesting as shit.
Well, the thing that's cool about what you're doing, I mean, the thing we all have learned in this digital podcasting, you know, YouTube era, is you got to find a niche. You have to find that. And if you get lucky, you tap into something that's maybe already there or people are hungry for it. And man, people love conspiracies. They absolutely love talking about it. I love talking about, I mean, like.
They either love talking about it or they absolutely hate talking about it. And that's something I've had to learn slowly over time. It's like, you just can't. I get booked on all these like radio shows, and that's all they want to talk about is conspiracies. And within 5 minutes, everybody's screaming at each other because, you know, Some people like comforting lies over like unsettling truths.
Yes,
and
yes,
it just is what it is. It's like I spend time studying this stuff and like, nope, it's not real. It's like weird. Politics is the one thing where you can do no research and you have a PhD in it. You have a PhD, you know everything. And so you just got to watch who you bring it up to.
Mm. Yeah, true. Because
I don't know. Movie reviews kind of similar.
I'm sure.
Yeah, you could solve. Yeah, it's not. I can tell you, as a guy that does a political YouTube show, it's not as close.
Yeah.
As Chris, I've read our angry emails, yes, and I've read the political vigilante ones. And
probably not as similar.
A little different.
Yeah.
But
right.
Yes, people get passionate about movies, but I think the thing about politics is like, if people, and I think part of it is just in this country, because we have this two-party system, you have to groupthink one way or groupthink the other. And whatever one you, then you can't. And the thing I've noticed, neither, like I've said, like the diehard Trumpers and the diehard Hillary people act almost identical.
Identical. And they don't get it.
They don't, and they wig out over just like the facts. Like Trump has done these things.
So right. Is this the stuff you cover on the conspiracy?
Yeah, show, we go. I'm like, we do geopolitical. We'll
but do you do like alien stuff? Like,
yeah, yeah,
do,
yeah. Oh, I love it all. Uh-huh. I mean, I know if I do a political show, what was the great? The death of George Bush, right? If I do that show, I'll get great numbers. Mm-hmm. I know if I go into like the paranormal, it's not going to be the same numbers. But I don't want to do an echo chamber.
Right.
I just don't. I know what if I say these things, they will love it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I think that's the problem with MSNBC and Fox is you're just telling them what they want to hear.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm like, I want both sides to be heard.
Now, what you have Tinfoil Hat and you also have Punch Drunk.
Yeah. Right? Punch Drunk Sports.
So now that is that specifically sports or do you guys go off on tangents?
Well,
on
you
that
know,
too?
It's more like the launching point is sports. And, mm-hmm. you know, some days we'll talk all sports and then some days we'll just talk. What's going on in the world? It's an interesting podcast.
All right. So let's get into some movies.
Let's talk some movies.
Now, Widows was a movie that I've heard nothing but good things about, and I haven't had a chance to see it, so I was really curious to see what your take was, especially when I'm really like, this is the guy's first film, Steve McQueen, since 12 Years a Slave. It's like quite an interesting choice after doing that movie.
You know, and that's... This was more than just they gave Viola Davis a Taken.
Right.
You know, like this is, which I have, we've talked, I love it when they're just like, you get a take, everyone gets a Taken. Right. Mm-hmm. This was way more than that because it deals with the thing I loved about it, it deals with the entrenched politics of Chicago because that's where this movie takes place. So Colin Farrell is running to be an alderman. So if you know, I grew up in Chicago. So the alderman.
Shady stuff, dude.
They all Chicago alderman, man.
Is he allowed to run because he's foreign?
Yeah, and he's allowed to try to do a bad Chicago accent. So that was there was a couple areas overall good movie. I liked it mainly because Viola Davis.
It's a heist movie, right?
It is a heist movie.
Uh-huh.
So the premise, and this is all in the trailer. I won't spoil anything. Right. She's married to Liam Neeson. He's a criminal. She's kind of aware of his life, but kind of like, fine, you do your thing. I don't know that much about
like
it.
Like a mob wife.
Is Liam Neeson a bad guy in this movie?
Yeah.
That's such an interesting shift of brand.
Yes. Yeah. And so it starts out like he's just this, he's criminal. And the top of the movie, a big heist goes sideways and he and his crew die. And... they rob from the wrong guy. They rob from a guy that's actually a former mobster, still is a gangster guy, not Italian mob, but street thug, you know, drug dealer guy who's now running for alderman against Colin Farrell. So there's the like murkiness of it, which is good. I love the like, it's not clean cut. They're not like
blurring some lines.
A lot of blurry lines. Right. And in that, and in all these conversations, you see, and Steve McQueen wrote the script with, I forget who else, but he wrote it. And you see, like, no one's innocent. You know, like, there's a local preacher that's got a big congregation. And he normally backs Farrell, and he does, you know. So it's like, and the actor...
Because that's life.
Well, yeah.
Well, religion and politics don't mix. I'm like, oh, wait a minute.
Nobody uses religion for power.
Yeah.
No, that's never happened.
What I didn't realize, too, this movie, it's a it's based on a 1983 British TV series. So that's... it's interesting that this is actually a remake.
Yeah, it's you know, I just want to bring up because the guy from Get Out, the lead character from Get Out, plays one of the like henchmen, and he's him and Viola Davis are fantastic.
The guy from Walking Dead's in it too, John Bernthal.
Yeah, Michelle Rodriguez is in it. I mean, it's really it's Brian Tyree Henry plays Jamal Manning, which is really. He does a good job with that. And then I want to see where's his...
Was this a Taken for women? Like, sometimes when you do an all-female cast, I feel like guys get turned off because they've seen, like, what female entertainment is, which is just shit on guys the whole time. Like, you're literally paying to be told how stupid you are. for like 2 hours, whatever it is. You're like, okay, yeah, I'm just an idiot. And, you know, if it went the other way, there'd be outrage and, you know, well, hashtags.
You know,
and all
it's,
that
it's
stuff.
Interesting when Hollywood falls into that trap of like, well, this is what women want. Those movies very rarely do well. Like, it's when those movies with female leads and female driven storylines are more organic and like broaden the net and widen the net and catch everyone because it's an entertaining story and characters, that's when they do well.
That's what this movie does. Mm-hmm. There's a couple, like I said, Colin Farrell trying to do a Chicago accent. A couple times I'm like, I'm from Chicago.
That's not a Chicago not. Accent.
He's yeah. such an interesting dude. Like, what a weird, it's a great career, mm-hmm. but it's a weird career.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. Like he's a guy that you go, you know, I think I go...
Is he an A-list actor? He is, but then
Colin
has...
Colin Farrell, yeah.
Yeah,
is.
But is he? But I mean,
A-?
Like...
A-minus?
I go B-plus, because I think... We talk about this before. Mm-hmm. I've talked about this before. Everyone's like, oh, Colin Farrell's amazing. Mm-hmm. Give me his resume. Give me his 3 to 6 amazing performances that he's done. Mm-hmm.
Like, good-looking isn't an acting talent.
No. In Bruges?
Yeah.
Tigerland, okay, Aaron.
Aaron loves a shit on everybody's birthday cake. Just comes in with just a comment to throw our fucking good point out the door. You know, I don't hate him, dude. God bless. I mean,
he was actually good in that. I can't remember the name of it. The Mary Poppins movie where Tom Hanks plays Walt Disney.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's good. He plays some. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm not trying to just take shit all over Colin Farrell, but he's not as Daniel Kaluuya. That's the lead character from Get Out. Okay, so he
Kaluuya is his SNL name,
right? He's really good too, because in Get Out, you know, he just plays this like nice guy boyfriend who's like, oh my God, I'm in this crazy situation. I love Get Out. I love what he did there. This movie, he plays a fucking evil button man.
Saving Mr. Banks with that Disney movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, aside Colin Farrell's accent aside, he plays a pretty decent. He's inherited his Robert Duvall is this old Irish guy who's been the alderman for 30 years, and now it's his son. And you see the entrenched, corrupt.
Oh yeah.
Politics.
Family
of Chicago.
Politics.
Yes. Yeah, and the racist. You know, his Robert Duvall. There's some great scenes, and it says here that they improvise them, which is really
right.
It comes across. It feels like. If you had this type of dad that was just power hungry and old school, that this is, and you're trying to like be your own man, but you're afraid of him, you know,
that's an interesting dynamic.
Yes.
Like, you know, so that'd be really interesting to watch, I would think.
It is interesting. Mm-hmm. And then there's some scenes where Colin Farrell's like, I don't even want this.
Yeah. I think sometimes these kids just end up going into the dad's business because it's what is available. And you could obviously tell they don't like doing it.
I bet
it's
you
just what they know.
I bet you George Steinbrenner's kid could give a shit about the Yankees.
Right?
I bet you he's like, I don't fucking care about baseball, you know?
And they're never...
I've been surrounded by it for 80 years.
I don't care.
Well, I mean, look at Mark Davis and the Raiders. I mean...
What's that, Aaron? He's actually the owner. Yeah, he's the owner.
That's what I mean. He inherited his dad's business. That's my point. He just had to take it over, but doesn't really want to do it. In seeing interviews with Steinbrenner's kid, I bet you he doesn't really want to do it.
Yeah.
There's this thing that Colin Farrell is, there's a couple scenes.
And I think before every interview, a publicist whispers in his ear, remember, don't mention how much you don't want to do this.
Smile. Talk about like you care.
Talk about how great the Yankees are.
Yeah.
You love baseball.
It's very interesting when the kids of something get in, man, because, you know, in Japan, you're not allowed to leave your business to your kids. It's illegal. Wow. When a child takes over a business, like you see in the stock market, like the stock drops. Because everybody knows, it's like, did he earn this spot or was he given this spot? Right. Does he have the actual skills to do it? Because just because you're somebody's kid doesn't mean you have all their skills.
Right.
You see it happen a lot.
All the time. Because the thing is the parent who that was successful usually had to claw out of some difficult situation. Right. The kid just is born into easy life.
Yeah.
And what are they going to do? So... there's that thing in there, and there's a little, and I don't want to spoil it, there's a little twisty, turny stuff kind of towards the end where I was like, did we need that?
Mm-hmm.
That, but going...
In what sense? Well, like, without spoiling it, but
it's hard to say it without spoiling.
Okay, okay, okay. Okay.
But some twists.
Just some twists and turnaround. Just like, okay. Mm-hmm. But going back to the question of a primarily female cast, the way they wrote, because from the trailer, I'm like, all right, how are regular? I always have a question whenever it's like a regular person just immediately becomes a badass. You know what I mean? Just right. Like he was right. Pushed too far. You know, right. Like really, how could he just? You know, they did a good job of these women were thrown into it. A couple of them, you know, and they don't, these women have to kind of own the fact, and it's done quite well, I thought, of like, you knew your fucking husbands were into some shit. Don't play all like, what the hell?
Madoff's wife.
Yeah, I know.
You knew exactly what was going on, and you're crying that you have no money. You knew exactly what's going on.
Yeah. It's like mob wives. It's like like, you know, I don't know. He just went out and went to business. Like Jerry Sandusky's wife. I just heard noises from the basement.
Yeah.
Tony Soprano's wife. Yeah. I had no idea.
Oh,
it's amazing how many bad guys get laid a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like Hitler got a ton of action, right?
So there's some of that in there, and it's you sort of see the all right, they better figure this out. And Viola Davis is like, we got to figure this out. And you see them sort of stumble around. They're like, well, how am I going to go buy guns? I don't know. It's America.
Is it the question we always have is when, you know, there's this weird thing when we comic books always love to put like super hot women as action heroes. And it's great in a comic book. But when you see it in a movie, you're like, that would never happen. Like Pirates of the Caribbean, what's her face? The waif model that is like swinging a sword that weighs three times her. Oh, yeah. And you're
Keira Knightley.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, she's like, she's not fighting. She, the only thing she's fighting is anorexia, right? Yeah. So it's like this, it doesn't play to
you
me.
You want to see Ronda Rousey as an
something
action
something like that.
Yes.
Does it come off like that?
You're it does. It's like.
And Gal Gadot. I mean, she was a soldier. Yeah. Like you believe her. I mean, she even got criticism. Oh, she's too small and, you know, model-like. And I'm thinking,
she was in the Israeli army. She knows how to fight. And Michelle Rodriguez, you know, they did a good job with her. You know, she's a beautiful woman, but they dressed her down to just look like a mom.
You know, I haven't seen the movie, but let me ask this. Did Michelle Rodriguez, did she frown a lot?
It's weird. She wasn't all smiles and she didn't break into a song and dance routine. No, she was always like, what? Like, that's her whole thing. That's her whole bread and butter.
Yeah.
Like Clint Eastwood made a living off of one glance. So that's what she does. But no, there's some really cool, you know, and it shows sort of the corruption of it. And again, Viola Davis, man, the flashbacks of Liam Neeson and, you know, the they all got involved in this situation and they probably are like, fuck, we shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was definitely... Mm-hmm. Yeah, overall it's a good movie. I mean, it's getting good reviews. I mean, there's a little like you can tell. There was some like, well, this is a Me Too movie, so all the women have to be great, and all the guys have to be horrible. There's a little bit of that, but that's a little bit of that where you're like, okay, but overall I liked it, and I liked the characters, and I liked the development, and I like, you know, I like a heist movie. I just like a good heist movie.
I love them.
Mm-hmm. I love a good heist movie. That's why, I mean, this was the thing, like when we talked about...
I root for bank robber spot.
Yeah,
when
of
I
course.
See it on the news, when they're like, I hope they got away.
I hope they got away.
As long as nobody dies, get away.
Yeah, and no one gets hurt. No innocents, especially no innocent people.
They're the last of the outlaws.
Yeah, like if the CEO of Wells Fargo, the head guy that got the $124 million severance package, if he got one between the eyes, I wouldn't lose any sleep.
But
none of the employees should get it. But so you're kind of like, and the thing about a heist is a good heist movie, and this does it, usually tells
you. You guys are just kind of, you know, talking about just basically going to the Purge. Yeah, this is where we're headed.
No, no, I just, well, the thing is they do, I mean, a little bit.
Yeah. But
I mean, a good heist movie paints the picture as to why, gives you compelling reasons as to why they have to do this. Why someone might betray someone, why someone is, why, like all of this and the motivation of everybody. The criminals have motivation. Mm-hmm. They didn't have much of an opportunity. Everyone in the movie was sort of thrust into something mm-hmm. and didn't have much choice and is trying to do the best they can. Some are choosing just, I'm going to go full criminal. Some are like trying to mm-hmm. get out of this life. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Very cool.
You know?
All right. Well, I was fortunate enough to see a preview screening of Bumblebee. It's not out for about another week or two.
How and, do you consider this fortunate?
Yeah. Well, you know, I have it's to limit a little background on this movie. First of all, that I was not excited at all when I heard that this movie got announced. I'm like, oh, another Transformers movie. They're all god-awful. They're unwatchable. Why would I want to see a spinoff? And then as I started hearing a little bit more about it, I started getting a little more excited. Set in the 80s, set like the Transformers that I actually grew up with, everything from the way they were designed to the way the characters, the way they actually were. Directed by the director of Kubo and the Two Strings, an animation director, someone who can actually understand what these Transformers should actually look like. Michael Bay just producing still made me nervous, but not involved in the script or anything like that.
He's such an interesting guy, right?
Horrible. He's... I went to this movie slowly getting a little excited. The other thing, in a weird way, that made me a little more excited to see the movie, it had a slashed budget. It had a much lower budget than a regular Transformers movie. And it still had a big budget, but not a Michael Bay budget.
Right.
So
those movies are $150 to $200 million budgets.
Yes. Yeah. And this was like closer to the
And do all the Transformers movies make money?
Yeah.
They all make money, although it's been a law of diminishing returns. Each one has made a little bit less.
Yeah.
But they're all unwatchable. They're absolutely horrible.
But they help sell video games.
Yeah.
Do you like any of the, let's say, comic book movies?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're big Marvel?
Yeah, Marvel, and I liked Wonder Woman. The DC ones, not so much, but, huge Marvel.
To clarify here, according to IMDb, the budget was $128 million.
Right, which is under...
So that's a low budget.
Yes, yeah, considering Michael Bay, it's under 200 is lower. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing about this movie. It was good. It was actually a good Transformers movie.
Chris.
And I swear to God, it
Chris
was.
Chris Mancini.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it was a good Transformers
movie. Christopher James Mancini. It Do you know good. What you're saying?
I am. On I am. This show? I know. I am saying it, and I am standing behind it. It was a now.
Is this like a food critic saying Toby Keith's restaurant is actually?
God, I hope not. But the thing about this movie, let me just say, it was fun. It was nostalgic. It had a story, which was already more than any of the other Transformers movies had. And it had interesting characters. And then it also had actual development between the humans and the Transformers. And everything about the Transformers was completely redesigned to actually make them actual characters, because this guy, Travis Knight, was an actual animator, so we knew what to do. He said he actually took... We saw the featurette after the movie, and they interviewed him and the staff and the crew, and they were saying that they actually went back and redesigned everything to look like the old Transformers, but also they took away a lot of the detail to make them look like what they're supposed to look like. Like, when you look at a Transformer, especially growing up with them as a kid, when you would transform into a robot, they would like, okay, well, there's a plane wings on the back, or there's a fender on the arm. So you could tell that they were made from a car or a plane or anything. Right. But, you know, Michael Bay, all he did was make it gears and silver and metal and rubber. So all the charm of even the design of the characters was gone.
Yeah.
So... And every time he was interviewed about it, Travis Knight, there was a subtle dig to how everything Michael Bay did was wrong on these movies. So
yeah. He
kind of tried to avoid saying it directly, but everything he said, well, you know, we wanted to make them more expressive. We changed the design and all the things. Basically, he was saying, like, this is all the things that Michael Bay fucked up that we fixed in this movie.
When you have all that money, you get away from, like, the details, right?
Yep. So, and this is... So the biggest difference on this movie is you have a director who grew up with these toys, grew up watching the show, cared about these characters, and put his passion actually into the movie, whereas a director like Michael Bay, who just didn't give a shit and like, fuck you, this is good enough, this is all you deserve. And that comes through in the movie as opposed to the other movies that we saw.
Do you think he does that, or does he think what he's doing, what is what you guys, I mean, like when a comic goes up and we all like, oh, this guy's the hackiest dude. Is he going up there going, I'm going to hack it up? Or is like, does he think he's doing something? Does Nickelback think they're a bad band? Or do they think they rock?
I think they rock. I think the hacky comic goes, no, I'm going to,
because they walk around like you got comics who are Nickelback walk around like they think they're Led Zeppelin. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so, like, does Michael Bay think, he's like, oh, I'm just going to do whatever? Is he like, oh, dude, you got to watch this, bro. Knocked it out of the park.
I think he has a complete disdain for the viewing audience that he's making the movies for. I really do. I think he really has a hatred and a disdain for anyone who watches his movies, because it really, there is such a lack of energy and effort to what he puts together. But now, you keep in mind, he comes from a visual arts background. He was a visual artist.
He was a music director, video director. Yeah. Right?
And no, he was a visual arts supervisor. And then he made the transition to directing poorly. But everything that he does focuses literally on just the shot by shot.
Well, look how much money he makes. He can't be that bad.
Yeah, I hate that argument.
Yeah, how things explode or how things look visually. That's the only thing these movies. I mean, I'm watching this movie and I'm remembering the other Transformers movies thinking, how is it possible that you've made giant robots fighting boring? And he did for like four movies. And now this movie, when the giant robots fight, it's actually choreographed. And it's interesting because an animator put every shot and sequence together. So it's far more interesting. Now, will it win any awards? Is it an amazing film? No. But it's what a Transformers movie should have been. It's fun, thin story, fun characters, and basically a good popcorn.
It's like when you watch a network sitcom, you're like, that's good. It's still a network sitcom.
Right.
They can only go so far with it, but what they did the best they could with the opportunity that they had.
If it could have used another polish on the script to get rid of the lines that were very, what's the word I'm looking for? Dumb. You know, like there's a couple really where you just roll your eyes. I'm like, that could have gone our way in a rewrite.
How was Hayley Stanfield?
She was good. She was good. And they gave her some, even when she's delivering these really dopey, corny lines, she was good. But even like Travis and I tried to fix the dopey shit that Michael Bay put in, like just in the kind of storyline, because it's technically a prequel. Like, you know, Bumblebee can't talk in the Michael Bay movie, so he talks through the radio. So every time a song plays, that's really what he's saying. But in this movie, like, they have to kind of explain how that happens, why he can't talk, like another robot, like, ripped out his voice box. But at the beginning of the film, you know, you see him, he's actually talking, and he's actually a fully fleshed character. I'm like, oh, yeah, this would have been much more interesting if you could have allowed the character to speak. So it's so many things. Like, he could only fix so much.
Dude, when you got all those special effects, you got to cut a couple voiceovers.
Yeah. You got to get, we can't afford another voiceover actor.
You barely put money into the script, which is, I think, the biggest problem with movies right now. It's just like, dude, the 70s were the best. The script writing was top shelf.
You know, and it's got all the fun 80s songs in it. You know, Bumblebee's watching The Breakfast Club and one of the scenes. Like, it's got those references in it. And they even played, like, the song You've Got the Touch, which is the, the movie that's actually from the animated version of the film. So there's all these kind of, like, Easter eggs in it. So, like I said, it won't win any awards, but it's the Transformers movie that we should have had many years ago, where it was just fun, it was interesting, it had some character to it, and it was just charming. And it didn't have 1,000 Transformers in it. It had Bumblebee, a couple villains, and a couple cameos, but then it was able to focus on the actual story. So honestly, this is, I really feel like this is a course correction on the Transformers movies. So now, when it comes out and everyone disagrees with me, I'll be curious to hear it. But I liked it.
I can't wait for that.
My family got hot takes, bro.
Yeah, hot takes. My family liked it. You know, my kids liked it so much they want to see it again. And it was interesting when you've been fucked over so many times on these movies by Michael Bay. It's almost like you're not even enjoying the movie. You're just getting relief by watching the movie. like oh, finally. Like, was Transformers so hard to make a decent popcorn movie? Was it that difficult? Giant robots transforming and fighting, was it that hard to make it interesting? And Travis Knight said, no, it wasn't. It was just being done wrong for a decade. So,
all right. I saw Chasing Train, this really cool documentary on Netflix about John Coltrane, which was like you know, Netflix is making and producing and buying really great documentaries. And this was another.
Their docs are knocking it out of the park.
Right. And they can't stop them. They're just so awesome. And then their feature scripted movies.
Yeah.
Wow.
What the hell
is
going
Marvel,
on?
It's like Marvel, like TV show. It's like, I don't know what happened, but the movies are, I like them. I like them. Yeah, I go in there expecting what that is, and I enjoy it. And the reason that they're the only movies anyone go and see, because you know what you're getting. You're getting good.
Right.
Like, everything else is such a crapshoot. Like, we're talking for $20 to see a movie.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to risk it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you bring a family. It's like
Marvel TV shows.
$60.
Garbage. Like garbage. They always have that one hot chick that can act, but she's so stunningly beautiful that you just fuck it. I mean, just she's hot as hell, right? So you don't care. And it's every single Netflix original program. Just one chick who can't act and do anything. Boom, she's got a job. But their doc's knocking out of the. It's so interesting.
It's and this doc, man, they did an amazing job.
You're not going to be seeing Marvel TV shows on Netflix much longer.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean that whole thing is just
that's
getting
ending.
Yeah.
But this is like, so they interviewed, you know, his family, his kids, guys that played with him, and they did a really amazing job of like stuff. Some stuff. I'm a huge jazz fan, a Coltrane. I'm a Miles Davis fan, and you know, the history of. And the thing that was so amazing about John Coltrane, he was not a prodigy. He was in the Navy in 1945, and he was stationed in Pearl Harbor. And the first known recording of John Coltrane was in the Navy band. Mm-hmm. And they're like, he wasn't that great. Mm-hmm. He rehearsed and practiced. That's so many people are like, oh, Coltrane, man, we were in this hotel after a gig. He'd be practicing and practicing and practicing. Finally, someone would go, hey, shut the fuck up. And then he would just work on the finger work. He would take his mouth not and just keep practicing. So he would do it in the bathroom during breaks between sets. Mm-hmm. Like it was amazing. And you know, he was struggling with heroin, and there was like, why everyone was doing heroin back then. Because Charlie Parker did heroin, and this one guy goes, it was a stupid myth. People thought if I shoot heroin, I'll be as good as Charlie Parker. It's like, no, Parker was a genius.
Yes.
Whose heroin addiction fucked up his
career. Show me the data on that. Yeah.
Here's an instant Charlie Parker.
Yeah. No, nothing ever add heroin goes better.
Yeah.
No, never. It's never been a formula or a recipe for anything other than death and destruction.
It's horrible. So, and you see Coltrane, you know, he was with Miles Davis's band initially. Heroin got in the use. Davis kicked him out. Then his second stint when he got sober with with Miles Davis was like when they made Kind of Blue, which that album is fucking unreal. And then they talk about when he made Love Supreme, which is, you know, Kind of Blue and Love Supreme is one of the most amazing album. It's just like, it's transformative to me. And Kind of Blue is just beautiful poetry. And, you know, Coltrane was a part of all of that. And how he did it. And then later in his career, and this happened to him and both Miles Davis, they started like, they kept transcending jazz, and some people didn't get it later in their career. Like, this isn't jazz. And they're like, what do you mean talking about? Right. We fucking created bebop. Who are you to tell us? And you know, that whole scene, man, Thelonious Monk, Dizzy Gillespie, I mean, all those guys.
All those jazz guys had the best names.
Best names. Was the
they're opposite of porn stars.
Was the movie was the movie a mix of like archival footage and like recent interviews?
Yes.
Or like what was it?
It was, and that, they did a great job with that, which is you know, we talk about that a lot. This is a very specific type of doc. It's a historical figure documentary. Mm-hmm. So they did a great job. And the filmmaker did a really cool job. So the modern footage is, you know, nice, high-def, lockdown interview footage, intercut with a lot of black-and-white photos and black-and-white TV. And so when the filmmaker would do certain graphics, they would do the graphics in that sort of style of... So the Blue Note label had that very specific type of photography for the labels and that artwork, the graphics on the Blue Note, that was the jazz. So they would do animated graphics like that. And they did a cool thing of like, you know, the timeline, you know, his Coltrane's timeline and where he started. And it just did really cool because that's the thing. When you're dealing with, we talk about this a lot, sit down interviews and black and white photos and some black and white TV or whatever, you know, how do I make this visually stimulating as a filmmaker? Well, they did a wonderful thing. They have this awesome music. And so they did animation to that to make it more visual.
That's great.
For the transitions and to get you back and forth between telling the story. And so it's a really, like you're saying, man, like you can't lose with these Netflix docs.
Yeah.
You don't have to
wonderful.
Be a jazz fan. If you're like, I'm never that big of a jazz fan, watch this. It's an amazing story. Because he's just one of those guys that was like a trendsetter. You know, just did something, did different things. And who did he start with? You know, he was in Parker's band. He was in Miles Davis band. So he's, you know, Dizzy Gillespie. And he learned from these other, like, who came before him, trendsetters. So it's a great doc.
It's like, right. You may be more talented than me, but you won't outwork me. You know, That's the whole thing.
And
you see that in athletes too.
Yeah.
Like, where they're like, they don't have the, like Jerry Rice, if you saw him, you know, the famous wideout for the San Francisco 49ers, like he has every single rushing, every single passing or catching,
receiving
yards. But dude, if you saw him, you would know he was like a world-class athlete.
No, he outworked everybody.
Yep. Mm.
And there's a lot of guys that had more taller, faster, stronger, whatever.
I love that stuff. I love watching people go through the process. Mm-hmm. That's so much better than this American Idol crap that they're throwing out.
Yep.
And I think there's some people get consumed with making it more than building like a brand that's a strong brand that will weather the ups and the downs and all that stuff, and that takes time.
Well, you know, it seems like the goal isn't to be, you know, a great artist. It's to be get on one of these shows.
It's to be famous and rich and famous. Yeah, Coltrane was like he wanted to express himself artistically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he wanted to make a living and do well, but it was more about
that's where I'm at, dude.
That's where we got to be at, because I think I resonate with it because, you know, we've all been doing this a while. We've all chased the TV shows and all that other stuff. I've had a little taste of doing some TV or whatever. I want to do what I feel good and authentic about. I don't want to do commercial jingles. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like Coltrane, like he went up in his room for like weeks and his family never saw him. And then he comes down and goes, oh, I wrote Love Supreme. That's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't go, what's commercially going to sell at the pop charts?
Yeah.
He just did his thing, and it's so fascinating to watch.
Dude, I love that, man. It's almost like when you watch Bill Burr do work new material, and he bombs. He like, and I mean that in the most loving sense, like he goes up there, and he's not afraid to eat it, and he just goes through it, and that to me is like an education.
Yeah.
Like watching somebody just go through this, and the process it goes through to achieve greatness, which is like somebody said it, like the price of success is fail. The admission for success is failure. You got to go, you got to fail. And it's fun to watch people go through that and then come out on the other side.
Yeah. Coltrane got sober on his own. He did what they called the old school cold turkey, locked himself in his house and just did heroin withdrawal, not in a hospital. Which is insane.
Yeah, that's not the best way to do
which
it.
Which is insane, insane.
So, all right, so check it out, Chasing Train, the John Coltrane documentary. Okay, we've got some Patreon
Come
sponsors.
Come on, thank you for supporting the show, you patronies.
Thank you so much for December. Johnny Rulon's still with us. He's promoting his novel Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon, both digital and hard copy. It's a stream of consciousness novel which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, at the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com, happyhorrorshowproductions.com. And the Audacity Performing Arts Project. They produce after-school performing arts projects in poor, underfunded, and low-performing schools. Performing arts education is not a luxury. Please visit them at audacityperformingarts.com. That's audacityperformingarts.com. And from Chris Parker Howard, Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time.
I love that.
New episodes every Friday wherever podcasts are found. Find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com.
I love that.
That's coffeeoversuicide.com. And Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast and host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows. They explored the boundary between comedy and tragedy. The shows were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show on the Melbourne International Comedy Festival in April 2018, with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience, and over 100,000 downloads on the special so far.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, alicefraser.com. That's Fraser with an S, F-A-R-A-S-E-R. And Rebecca Evans, the art podcast. When we move past hesitation, we're true to ourselves. We find our own art in life. When you hear some fun stories and get inspired, check out the art. That's at Facebook. Hey, Rebecca, that's facebook.com/theartpodcasts with an S. And last but not least, La Calavera by Alan Ross. It's the story of a pirate radio operator who decided to go into the pirate cable TV business. Darren Loney, together with a group of misfits and the questionable guidance of a spiritual advisor in the form of Richard Nixon, gear up to take on the world's largest media conglomerate and its egomaniacal celebrity CEO. It's on Amazon in ebook and hard copy. All right, let's look at some trailers, Graham. Now, you know, the big one that just came out, the Avengers Endgame first teaser trailer. So we got to talk about that. Let's play it. And as you watch it, you'll notice that it deliberately just gives you a taste. It's so calculated, these trailers, like the way they release and roll out. Like, you're not going to get a giant fight battle sequence.
Does this mean the Avengers are coming to an end?
So, well, this itineration of the Avengers, yeah.
Aw. Mm-hmm.
This thing on? Hey, Miss Potts. If you find this recording, don't feel bad about this. Part of the journey is the end. Just for the record, being adrift in space with zero promise of rescue is more fun than it sounds.
I wonder if there's anybody watching this trailer.
Food and water.
What happened before this?
4 days ago. Oxygen will run out tomorrow morning. That'll be it. When I drift off, I will dream about you. It's always you.
By the way, they could have just played that and I would go Thanos to
did. Yeah, I know. Just
exactly
the
what
logo.
He said he was gonna do.
Going to dust.
He wiped out 50% of all living creatures.
We lost. All of us. He lost friends. He lost family. He lost a part of ourselves. This is the fight of our lives.
This is gonna work, Steve.
I know it is. Because I don't know what I'm gonna do if it doesn't.
Yeah, there's always these things. Oh, this is like the American West. Accurate. We'll see. Shoot you in and out in 2 weeks, and you get $10 million. Maybe they'll come back.
This is Scott Lang. We met a few years ago at the airport in Germany. I got really big.
Is this an old message?
Ant-Man, I know you know that.
It's the front door.
That's me. Can you buzz me in?
Ant-Man's such a great addition to the Avengers. So, all right. Now, what I loved about this trailer is it literally gives you nothing on story, plot, and like it's just enough to get you excited. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's coming out next summer. I don't need to see another trailer. I'm already there. Yeah, so,
yeah, it's the thing I like about.
They could save $100 million on a marketing campaign. Just, you know, put out on YouTube what the date is. And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an Avengers movie.
Yeah. You don't
you know what
anymore.
You're getting.
Yeah.
I know. Mm-hmm. And like maybe that 15 seconds of Tony Stark talking to his helmet going up, right. I'm not going to make it. Just show me that date. I'm in.
Yeah.
You know you've got, like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you don't need to sell me on any of this.
There's
but
very
a great
few people going like, oh, well, I saw the first Avengers Infinity War. I'm not going to see the second one.
Yeah.
How many people are doing that?
Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, it's wonderful. I thought like when I saw the first Avengers, I'm like, when people were doing this genre back in the day, this is what they dreamed of.
Yes.
What it would look like.
Yep.
We've gotten there.
We finally figured it out. I mean, this is the thing where you know, there's much to criticize about some of Hollywood's decisions or whatever, and the movies they greenlight and the ones they don't. But this fucking franchise is awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's everything
when
you want.
When it's done correctly.
Big show business, fun Hollywood to be. You want it. It's the joy you had when you watched Star Wars when you were a kid. Or Raiders.
I understand it's not for everyone, but you know what? It's for enough.
It's probably,
yeah, it's doing pretty good. There's enough. Has it ever gotten any Oscars?
No.
There you go. It's like back in the day when I was young and the Oscars was an event, there were movies that we all loved that were getting awards. Now it's become this like this elitist niche thing.
Well, you know, that might change. We'll see if Black Panther gets some nominations. I think it will, so we'll see.
But Infinity Wars gets nothing? Honestly, I mean, like, that was an awesome movie.
Out of the two movies, I liked Black Panther, but I liked Infinity War better.
Way more. Yeah, I mean, dude, Black Panther was fine, but it's like Infinity War is like, that was great.
It was. There's nominations that could come out of these films.
Yeah, I think
for
so.
For sure.
You could pull some nominations out of Black Panther. You could pull some nominations out of Infinity War. I mean, these are really cool. More than just graphics or special effects nominations. Like you could put there's some great performances in there. But
well, it's interesting, like the Academy was like, well, we're going to have a popular movie category now. And nobody knew or understood what that meant or what it was going to be, including the Academy.
Right.
So then they pulled it. I'm like, well, we're not going to do it this year. Oh, no, you're not going to do it ever because it was a ridiculous and stupid idea.
I think the Kevin Hart thing, whether it was constructed or what, just is a bad look for the Oscars.
Yeah.
Well, you know what they're even saying now? They're like, well, maybe we won't do a host at all now. Like,
I think that's even worse.
Yeah.
I think it's even worse, man. I think you're basically just isolating yourself in the corner instead of going, what do we got to do to get people to love this again?
The Oscars
include everybody.
Yeah, they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do to bring this show dragging and screaming into the.
What the situation is, man. It's they are the rich ruling elites of Hollywood, right? So the ruling elites anywhere are just out of touch. They don't get it.
Hollywood has no clue what the rest of the country's like.
None.
Like, you know, the Academy was trying to diversify and get like it was it you know, race is only part of the problem. The other part of the problem is age. You know, you need some Academy members that are under 70.
Dude, it's my theory. Talk about Tinfoil Hat. Trust fund kids are ruining everything. I mean, the Emmys was a giant trust fund kid award show. And it's just like they're getting it. And you used to see it all the time. You'd be like, oh, that's blah, blah. Now it's everybody. I mean, it's everybody. And it's just inclusive, dude. This notion that just all white guys are dumb and stupid and they've ruined everything, which isn't true at all. It's like, why would anybody watch that?
I know.
It's the worst business model I've ever seen in my life, that you can just shit on a giant segment of society to judge all, like any group, as negative. It's like you gotta judge people on an individual basis. And it's just, why would anybody in Oklahoma want to watch the Oscars? You're giving a movie to a guy who opened up a gay bathhouse and is fighting for glory holes in the fuck bathroom stall, and that's like the amazing movie. Like
best special effects.
It's so weird, man. It's like there's nothing wrong with being a little mainstream. Like I love Chris D'Elia as much as I love Doug Stanhope. They both mastered that. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. The Oscars, we've talked about it for years. They're so out of touch.
And we'll be talking about it again, for sure.
They keep going in the worst direction.
Well, you know, it's almost at the point now where we're like, well, what's the next dumb Oscar decision we're going to hear about? Like, you know, I'm sure it'll be something dumb beginning of the year or something.
Here's the problem, is everybody wants change as long as they get theirs, okay? So these people, they're all for diversity, but they still want their seat.
Yeah.
So it's like, how are you going to put people in there if they refuse to go away?
Yeah.
I know.
There's only one seat. Now, it's interesting. We were talking about Liam Neeson, that we're going to watch this trailer, and it's Liam Neeson playing exactly against the Liam Neeson type. So I found this trailer interesting.
All right. Hey, Portal, call Rory.
It's kind of a Taken, but it's like if Liam Neeson watched a Taken. No, this is just the commercial. Oh. But
the robots are taking over.
Yeah. No, they already have.
The nerds just love it.
Come on. What's going on?
Oh, did it,
I'm very honored to be named Kehoe Citizen of the Year. I'm just a guy who keeps a strip of civilization open.
When you doesn't have a very special set of skills. He drives a snowplow.
The road not taken. Did he get pushed too far?
I was lucky. I picked a good road early, and I stayed on it.
Mr. Coxman?
What can I do for you?
It's about your son.
He died of a heroin overdose.
We didn't know our own son.
Kyle wasn't a druggie.
Sorry, but all the parents say that.
You're gonna have to say a few words.
Kyle's dead. Tell me what happened.
He got mixed up with some drug dealer. Viking. He likes hurting people.
What is it with all these nicknames? Speedo, Viking, Eskimo.
It's a gangster thing.
Did you have a nickname?
Wingman.
Wingman. I'm gonna kill him.
No,
those guys.
One guy could disappear. Two? Who wants me dead?
Three of Viking's drug dealers have disappeared.
What makes you think you can kill a man?
I read it in a crime novel.
Okay. I think this trailer is doing me any justice.
My job.
This doesn't happen in Keo.
It just did.
You know what it feels like? We're going to put Liam Neeson in a Fargo, but we're not going to hire the Coen brothers. They're too expensive. Because I feel like it's kind of a cool idea, but I'm like, I'm thinking this is the kind of movie that is not going to know what it wants to be. Because it's an action thriller, but then it's got like satire to it.
Yeah, all right. Remember how I was talking about
Nels
Widows?
Coxman, Citizen of the Year.
The, like,
good for
when a regular person suddenly just becomes a fucking...
A badass,
a badass,
yeah.
Navy SEAL. Like, that's... I have a problem with that. And based on this trailer, he's like, how are you going to kill... Because everyone thinks, oh, I'd like to kill... It's not easy... I would imagine to start killing somebody, to just become a murderer, like an act of,
and specifically going after criminals and murderers,
criminals.
And
guys
drug
who
dealers.
Do this kind of shit for a living,
who are actual murderers,
the tow truck
like the
guy.
Majors, whoa, I know kung fu, and they're just they know everything right there.
I just sort of am like, look, I'm all down with Liam Neeson's second act of his life, just being Johnny taking everybody out. So part of me is like, all right, now he's in Alaska fucking murdering people.
Right.
Fine.
That very much has a Steven Seagal type movie feel to it.
I was a little disappointed there wasn't a wolf in the trailer.
Yeah.
It could have been cool.
Mm-hmm.
One of the wolves from The Gray followed him home, you know.
Maybe you're right, Chris. Maybe there's more to this movie than that trailer just showed us.
Yeah, which... I really felt like that, you know, because we've seen so many trailers. I felt like that trailer, well, what am I supposed to show? With this quirkiness, like a Fargo-ness, or is it an actual thriller? Or is it like, well, this movie's all over the map. I don't know what to do with it.
I mean, are they going to do that one little thing that they always do, like... Hey, John, you ever talk to your old army buddies? Oh, that was years ago. Like, all right, now I know he's a soldier. I used to do some cage fighting, but I was a younger man then. Like,
well, you know, the people in special forces don't like to keep in touch. Yeah. You know?
You know, it's Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
I haven't been a SEAL for decades.
Yeah.
Anyway, I like being a tow truck driver. All right. I'm probably going to see that movie.
Yeah.
I like those movies, dude, but that one looked a little weird.
It does.
They're almost like, hey, dude, what can we do that hasn't been done? Fargo, an action flick in Fargo. That's just what they do right now.
What can we do? All right. Where have we not had? Oh, let's go up into the frozen tundra so we can kill guys with a snow plow and and an ice chipper and a.
How does that movie get made? Does someone like write that movie and then like, oh, dude, we got Liam Neeson to do it? Or do they go, let's write something for Liam Neeson that nobody's ever done?
I think what happened after Taken was so successful, they just had a board. Just said, he's gonna do this, he's gonna do that. And then they ran out and someone was like, Alaska, done.
Yeah.
There's gotta be a script with these elements around somewhere.
And they just grab these things together and they tape together as a screenplay.
They put it together. So, all right, on DVD and Blu-ray.
Equalizer 2, what were we just talking
about? Yep, Equalizer 2.
I like the first one.
I love the first one, too. I didn't see the second one.
I thought it was awful.
Really?
Yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was
How to Kill People in a Home Depot.
Yes.
Yeah, dude, nobody's done that.
I know. It's like my only complaint is he just, every time he kills someone, he should have gone, you've been equalized.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only thing I wanted to see.
So it had a little pack of fake sugar.
Yes, of course. You're equalized. He throws the sugar down. That's his calling card.
Yeah,
you
know? Dude. I do miss that cheesiness of the 80s and 90s.
Yes, yes.
That weird tag, you know? Yeah, I love that. I pity the fool. Something like that.
Something.
Yeah,
something.
Dude.
So the next movie is Smallfoot. This is one of those animated kind of just like thing to put it into trick kids into bringing their parents to. It looked awful.
Yeah,
like kind of like, you know, oh, look, the Yetis are scared of the humans. I'm like, oh, okay. We're running out of things to animate? What's going on? Yeah.
Yep.
Looked terrible. And the next movie, speaking of,
Peppermint.
Peppermint Now.
Jennifer Garner got her taken and it was awesome.
And now this was a movie that interestingly, it did give you a, you know, kind of like an opportunity to use your imagination on how she got so well trained as a killer.
And I bought it. I was fine with it because it was like, she was off the grid for 5 years.
Yeah.
All right. So she trained with mercenaries.
Yeah.
She met Raja Al Ghul.
Started dating someone in Mossad.
She
met an Israeli soldier, learned real quick how to kill everybody.
Yeah, and joined the League of Shadows.
Yeah.
And now she's back.
Yeah, makes sense. And it only took 5 years. So it wasn't even that long.
So. Anyone can become a badass killer in 5 years.
Yeah,
I think so. If you put your mind to it,
you dedicate yourself.
Yeah,
you know,
so there's 10,000.
If you
hours
live
in there.
On the top of the snowy mountain in a monastery, of course, that's all you're going to have to do.
And you got a girlfriend that believes in you, right? You like this?
Yeah.
You don't want that girlfriend that doesn't believe you can be a top shelf assassin.
Yeah,
they're going to put doubt in you, and then it won't work out.
You're going to eat rice. You're
isolated with all you have is your revenge.
Yes.
And that's what feeds you.
I haven't eaten in 3 years since they killed my master.
Yeah. So, 5 years of a revenge buffet and then you're ready to go.
Low carb. That's revenge.
Definitely low carb.
All right, in the site Spotlight Fan Feedback, everything is still on sale in the store. Use the code Skynet, and you get everything, and the Doug Benson CDs
are
still
that
$4.99.
Into
the end of the month.
End of the month.
To the 31st.
All the way through the 31st, guys. Mm-hmm. Do your holiday shopping with us. The Doug Benson CDs on sale, $4.99. Yep. Free t-shirt with every t-shirt order.
Yes.
The downloads are working. The message boards are back up. Say hi to Charlene.
Yes, and we did have one issue that I went over today. When the cart got upgraded, one of the emails kind of blew up. That was the orders email. So if you had an issue with your order, we didn't get the email. So make sure you email us at info@comedyfilmnerds.com. The orders email is not working anymore. So info
support small businesses, you guys.
Yeah.
I know Amazon is cheaper, but
and
Jeff Bezos has a $75 million golf stream.
Yeah, we don't have that.
Unbelievable.
He's the worst.
Yeah, so you know, we apologize if like you did send an email about an order and we didn't get it maybe a couple weeks ago or whatever. So please email us again. I was able to actually go into the database and actually pull the old email, so I'm actually getting to those. But if I miss it and like you want to do a return or you had a problem with the order, please email info@comedyfilmnerds.com. Even if it was from 2 months ago, we'll catch up and we'll take care of you.
Cool.
So, all right, premiering this week, another Marvel weekend. This is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I'm actually really excited.
We're
going to
do a
movie.
Spoiler up on.
Yeah. It looks really fun. And we're actually going to have helping us review the movie. Mark Guggenheim, and he was one of the writers for Spider-Man. So he'll have some interesting insight for Into the Spider-Verse. So Deadpool 2, the PG-13 version.
Well,
so,
they used to be R?
Used to be R, yeah. So they're releasing it just for the holidays at PG-13 to get a younger audience in.
I love Deadpool. I love Marvel. This is just a money grab.
Of course it is. Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
We need to include
kids. They're going to ruin everything. You had gold. Why go to PG?
It's a weird release window, too. It's like you've got it's such a crowded field with all these other big budget movies coming out. So it must be that kind of thing where, like, well, can we get another couple million out if we do this? Like, I really think, like you said, it's definitely a money grab, but I wonder how much it's actually going to make.
I don't know. If they think they're going to squeeze another $200-300 million out, I would be shocked.
That would be a lot. Like, even if they
I think that's what they're banking on.
Really, that much?
I think they're looking to at least get $150 million out of this.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm. Well, then it would be a correct decision.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And the next movie is The Mule. This is the Clint Eastwood movie. I'm excited to see this movie. Yep. I love Clint Eastwood. I love watching, even in his... Twilight years.
Get off my lawn.
He's still putting out interesting movies. Chairs. And I still I want to see it. And it's such an interesting idea of, like, here's a guy, an old guy, who's still a mule for drug dealers. Like, what? Why would you?
Dude, I have a 55-year-old crack dealer near my house. Right.
What are you going to do?
I mean, good for him staying in the game.
55-year-old crack dealer, that's still like 30 years younger than Clint Eastwood.
You know, so. I think an 80-year-old mule is, you know, what's the retirement plan for drug mules?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's got to be a speech somewhere at the beginning like, all right, well, this is my last job.
There's got to be.
I said I'd never do it again, but then we're coming to, you know, your daughter's cancer bills are here or something.
I got to get this one last
more
payout.
Run.
Yeah.
One more.
Yeah.
It's that same line of dialogue of like, well, after being a special op, it's that thing. They'll just put one quick thing in there to just justify him still being a mule.
And, you know, after drinking that super soldier serum, I could probably do one more, you know.
I would.
So Mortal Engines, this is the next film, actually produced by Peter Jackson, not directed, but it's another kind of like young adulty dystopian kind of wanting to cash in on Hunger Games type of thing. I don't know. It looks visually interesting. It's got like giant cities on wheels that actually attack each other. So that looks like a cool, interesting idea, but I don't know. The movie, I think it could go either way. I don't want to get Maze Runnered again.
Don't.
Yeah.
Don't get Maze Runnered, Chris. You've had a tough go.
You know, against all odds, I got Bumblebee was good, so I don't want to push my luck.
What do you guys, Rochambeau for this?
Yeah.
Who has to take the shitty looking movie?
Yeah, we kind of do. We trade
off
sometimes.
Yeah, we trade off. Mm-hmm. There's just an unwritten rule. If there's something that potentially kids, he'll take it.
Yeah.
And if there's some just like... Yeah, if there's Taken in the Snow, then I'm gonna go see that probably. Mm-hmm. Like
Taken at the Circus.
Oh, I would.
The rodeo clowns got her, but they don't know who they're messing with.
Oh, you messed with the wrong rodeo clown.
Yeah. Oh, kind of like a high speed chase on a circus train. That'd be great.
Why'd you ever become a rodeo clown anyway? Mm. Oh, I did it between special forces. Oh, okay.
Between riding the mechanical bull and service in Afghanistan, this is kind of what I did. Yeah.
They had a mechanical bull at the Navy SEAL training center. We would do it on our off days. That's our episode, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
4:45. Lock it down, you Enjoy sons of bitches. It.
So now, Sam, why don't you do a round of plugs?
Okay. I have my special Armageddon that drops this Friday on Vimeo. Go to Vimeo.com. Just put in Sam Tripoli or stand-up specials.
How much is it?
The Viper Room. Well, you can rent it for $1.99 or buy it for $2.99. And then also I broke it up into two. The first part's called Zero Fucks, and that's the same thing, $2.99 own, $1.99 to rent.
What would you recommend I do, Sam? Should I rent it or should I buy it?
Yeah, do something. That's all I got to say. Like, come on, man. I think you got to support this stuff. I do think putting out your own special is the future, and the people who are doing it right now are really going out on a limb for those in the future. And there's less suits involved, more peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
Like, I buy people's specials now. Even if I can't watch specials because I just want to do my own thing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be like, oh, man, I just want to work on my own. But if I know somebody puts out a special, dude, you know, I'll go out there and buy it. Support the arts, man. You know, so I'm really happy with it. I always wanted to do my special at the Viper Room. That was like the first thing when I moved to LA. Like, I want to shoot my special at the Viper Room.
Very cool.
And it ended up It's gorgeous, and I'm very happy with it. So check it out. And then, you know, just the tour's been going great. We sold out Chicago, nice. And, you know, we're kind of going down the same thing Graham's doing it by himself. And it's kind of fun, dude.
You got to do it. You know, it's mm-hmm. the coolest thing. Like doing the
yeah, you and Ron are you're booking your own venue.
The Progressive right? Comedy Tour, we're going to Florida in January mm-hmm. 9th through the 12th. Go to GrahamElwood.com for tour dates. But, like, it's the coolest thing, and what Sam's talking about is us as artists, and we've done this a lot of comedy film nerds. You know, when we make our own thing and our own art, it goes back to the Coltrane documentary. Like, I don't want the suits. I mean, yeah, there's bigger money, but then there's someone saying you can't say this, you gotta say that, you can't do this, and it's like, no, man, I wanna just express myself. And we're so lucky now that there is the technology and the platforms to which we can make something and just put it for sale like you're doing on Vimeo.
Yeah.
And we're like, we do our own, Ron Placone and I mostly do our own ticketing. Sometimes we got fine venues and they really prefer their own ticketing, but we're getting the bulk of the door. So like when you buy one of our shows, no, it's paying for Ron and I to come out there. It pays for it. We're booking our own travel. We're doing everything ourselves. It's a lot of work, but I feel like I have so much more control. It's not like, oh, you had a falling out with this club owner and they booked 12 rooms around the country. You're done.
Yeah.
Like, right. or that guy loved you and he got fired and the new person or, you yeah. know.
Send a tape.
Yeah.
I mean, you just, there's always been this invisible hand, mm-hmm. you know, these gatekeepers. And there was a time if the gatekeepers didn't like you, you were done. Like
done.
One hit wonders. Why did we have one hit wonders? Because they wrote these songs and they wrote a song to hit. And then the radio stations, nope, we're not playing anymore, and they go away. Well, now that doesn't happen as much because through social media and all that, mm-hmm. you can go directly to your thing. It's all about creating your own pirate ship.
Yeah.
Be the captain of your own pirate ship. Find your brand. Mine it hard and just be like, you know, true to your fans, and they'll appreciate it, man. It just, it's hard work, but it... When you get to that place, it's a much, you appreciate a little
my
more.
My act is so much more political now, and I love it. I'm so happy with it. And I try it out at regular shows, and it does decent. But when I do those progressive shows.
What's a targeted audience?
Like,
it's
man, we show up. We had 100 people. We sold out in San Francisco.
Nothing's better than selling 100 tickets.
100 tickets. And they all want to see you. You don't have to explain who you are. I don't have to prove myself to anybody. And the other thing, too, I make a joke. You know, somebody yelled something out, and I started to react like a comic getting heckled. And I started laughing because the person, they're not heckling. They're not like, oh, you suck. They're like clarifying, like, actually, Graham, that ballot measure was passed.
Yeah.
You know,
like, yeah.
And it's long thought out, fact-based heckle.
It's not even a heckle. It's like a clarification. Yeah. It's a polite.
Yeah.
And it's so awesome.
A heckification.
A heckification. It's
very interesting. Bill Burr said best, when you're not famous, every show is an away game.
Yes.
And then, like, when you're like a 23-year vet and, like, I just headlined my own first theater show.
Right.
23 years in. No one would, any other business model would never do that. Mm-hmm. Go 23 years to get to where you wanted to be. But when you start playing your own show, it's like, wow, this is what a home game feels like.
Yeah. That's a great analogy.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
No, dude. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's mm-hmm. always a pleasure.
All right. Thank you, Sam.
Graham?
Yeah.
Anything, any specific dates you want to
just January 9th through the 12th in Florida. We're going to Gainesville, Orlando, Miami, and Jacksonville. Go to GrahamElwood.com. We're going to be doing a progressive comedy tour once a month starting in January.
That's great.
So we're releasing date. We're going to Texas. We're going to Utah. We're going, they're all on my website. So go buy and they all, the shows typically sell out. So get your tickets now. Mm-hmm. It's an awesome, and we have, you know, we have activists and we have like, the Veterans for Peace have set up tables and talk to people, and mm-hmm. you know, Democratic Socialists, and it's an awesome thing. So check it out. So that's cool. Our show.
Yeah, all right. And I want to mention we've recorded every episode of Conversations from the Abyss. They will start dropping in January. I can now announce the actors that are on because I've actually recorded them. They can't back out now. Hal Lublin, Mark Gagliardi, Rick Overton, Graham Elwood, of course, Cecil Baldwin, welcome from Night Vale, welcome to Night Vale, and Janet Varney from Stand Against Evil, Annie Savage, and Randy and Jason Sklar did one this year.
Oh,
so
nice.
It'll be really cool. They're going to start to drop in January. And the graphic novel is for sale. And again, it's also 20% off Long Ago and Far Away. And I'll be making a publishing announcement on that in January. So, but check it out. It will be, we do have signed copies that I'll be signing and sending out. And again, 20% off with the code SKYNET. All right. That's our show.
That's our show. Thank you, Sam Tripoli. Thank you, Aaron Brungard, and everybody at the All Things Comedy World Headquarters. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot first.